Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of It's Crime Time. We all know I enjoy cases that finally see justice after a long period of time due to those investigators who choose to never give up. This is one of those cases. Today, I will be telling the story of Marlene Warren and the Florida Killer Clown. All right, everyone, it's crime time. Marlene Mae McKinnon was born on April 15, 1950 in Mount Clemens, Michigan, to mother Shirley Twing. I couldn't find anything about her father, but she did have a stepfather named Bill Twing. Marlene spent most of her childhood on her grandfather's farm, and she was the middle of three girls. She was described by her mother and stepfather as being a kind, loving, helpful girl who was always smiling. And this really didn't change when she became an adult. She was very kind and always loved helping people, and she seemed to be cheerful and always smiling, even when she was going through some very hard times that happened in her life, which we'll get to in a second. Marlene had got married at a very young age, before she was even 18. She had two children, John and Joseph Ahrens. Marlene's first husband actually died at the age of 20. So at this point, she was a young widow with two children. It's said that even despite her devastating loss and all of the responsibilities she had to shoulder at such a young age, she was still a wonderful mother to her children. Her son Joseph, or Joey as everyone called him, described her as being a person of love. Marlene later met a new man named Michael Warren, who she fell deeply in love with. The pair were married on April 27, 1972. Michael, of course, became a stepfather to Marlene's two children. Joey stated that Mike quickly filled the father figure role that the two boys were missing, and Mike was a great husband to Marlene, at least in the beginning. The family seemed to be rebuilding pretty well after the loss of Marlene's first husband. The family then made a decision to move to the Wellington area in Florida, which is kind of an exclusive community called Wellington Aero Club. And Wellington is said to be one of the richest areas in Palm Beach County. When researching, I found that it's an area where several celebrities live or have lived, such as Vanilla Ice, Bruce Springsteen, Tommy Lee Jones, and Bill Gates. The Aero Club's homes were built around a grass airstrip, and there were airplane hangars in the backyard so that residents could easily park their planes or helicopters by their homes. In 1988, Marlene and the family experienced another devastating loss when the oldest son, John, was 22 years old at the time, ran through a stop sign in West Palm Beach. He struck another vehicle and he was pronounced dead on the scene. So at this point, Marlene, still being relatively young, had already experienced two devastating losses. One, of course, being the loss of her first husband and the father to her children. And then she lost her first son, John, when he was just 22 years old. Marlene once again had to pick up the pieces and try to keep her life in order. She became a very successful businesswoman. Her and Mike owned 17 pieces of rental property in a lower income area in Palm Beach County and a used car lot named Bargain Motors. The used car lot was more of Mike's business venture, though. I don't know exactly what part of it she got involved in, but from the sounds of it, on the rest of the research I did, she wasn't really involved a lot in the Bargain Motors side of things. Marlene and Mike began having some marriage troubles, and her son Joey recalls her telling him, quote, "If anything happens to me, your father did it," end quote. She thought that Mike was having an affair. Neighbors had said that they spotted Mike and another woman together frequently. And this woman was Sheila Keen, and they had been rumored to be having an affair for quite some time. On the morning of May 26, 1990, Memorial Day weekend, Marlene's son Joey, who was 21 years old at the time, was at the family home with some friends, Jean and Wendell Pratt and Mindy Perez, and Marlene was preparing a breakfast for the group in the kitchen. The doorbell rang and Marlene left the kitchen to answer the door. Joey heard his mom answer the door and say, "Oh, how pretty." After this, he heard a bang, so he went into the foyer to check on his mom. He saw her fall to the ground, gasping for air. She had been shot in the face. Joey's friends watched, and they kind of didn't really know what to do at the time. I mean, Joey was kneeling down with his mother as she was dying. He was trying to comfort her and help her. And, you know, his friends were all there when this happened as well. And they're just kind of standing there, I mean, horror struck, you know, they didn't know what to do. Marlene had opened up the door and had found this clown standing on her doorstep. The clown was dressed in a full clown costume, a wig, a nose, white face paint, and they were holding foil balloons and a white basket full of red and white carnations. One of the balloons was heart-shaped, and it said, "You're the greatest." As the clown handed the balloons to Marlene, they pulled out a gun and shot her in the face, and then they walked back down the steps to a white Chrysler LeBaron that was parked in the driveway. Joey saw the clown walk off and get into the driver's seat of the car. He said all he could really focus on were the clown's brown eyes. Joey hurried to his car to try to follow the clown, but he was unable to catch up at the time. A neighbor was out walking his dog when he heard the gunshot, and he saw people running out of Marlene's door yelling, "They've shot Joey's mother." Paramedics quickly arrived on the scene, and they rushed Marlene to the hospital. Investigators also sealed off the scene to begin their investigation right away. When talking to police, Joey told them everything he could remember about the clown, including the eye color, the fact that they were in a full clown costume, but they did not have clown shoes on. They were wearing dark boots. He also described the Chrysler LeBaron, which police put a bolo out for, so it was a white Chrysler LeBaron. At this point, Marlene was barely clinging to life at a local hospital. They located a bullet that was embedded in the C2 vertebrae in the neck area. So C2 is just one down from the vertebrae that is connected to your skull. So she had been shot in the face, and the bullet kind of went into her spine at an angle. And police were kind of able to determine from this that it was a 38 caliber gun that shot her. Mike Warren had left home at 10 a.m. He was heading to the racetrack in Miami with a friend of his when he received the call about Marlene. He turned around immediately and headed back to Wellington. He had made it only halfway to the racetrack before this happened. Police had been busy collecting evidence at the Warren's home to try to figure out who would want to do this to Marlene. She had no enemies that anyone knew of, and she was always kind and helpful to everyone. Luckily, the clown left the balloons in the basket of carnations, but there were no shell casings or a gun found. Police were able to locate the Publix store where the foil balloons had been purchased and the flowers. Two store clerks recalled selling the same basket of flowers and balloons to someone about an hour and a half before the shooting of Marlene had taken place. 2 days after Marlene was shot, her mother made the decision to take her off life support. On May 28th, Memorial Day, Marlene Warren passed away at Palms West Hospital at the age of 40. Her mom and son were by her side, and Joey had been holding her hand all day in hopes that he could feel something, but he never did. Joey then went on a radio talk show after his mother's death to discuss what happened, hoping to get some new leads. Joey had assumed the murderer was a man based on their gait and their large hands. They were also tall, and the boots the clown wore seemed more like male tactical boots. Deborah Offord, a clerk at West Palm Beach's Spotlight Capizio shop, locked the doors on the store and was closing everything up on the evening of May 24th. Someone knocked on the door. This person asked if they could run in quick and grab what they needed. Deborah and her coworkers told the person that they were closed and they needed to come back tomorrow. The person insisted that they wouldn't be long and they knew exactly what they needed. Deborah eventually kind of gave in and said, you know, like, okay, make it quick. She let the person in, and they very quickly picked out a clown suit, a curly wig, a sponge nose, and clown makeup. No special options, just the cheapest option for each item was selected. They asked for extra white makeup because they needed to make sure their face was fully covered. Deb said the person was androgynous, tall, maybe 5'8", wearing jeans, a plaid button-up shirt, and work boots. The store clerks asked the officers why they were so concerned with this customer and were devastated to learn that they may have been the ones to sell the costume to a murderer. Even though the person could have passed for a male or female, the clerks provided the police with a significant clue. The person who purchased the clown costume was a woman. So other than, of course, the obvious evidence of the type of gun and, you know, where the flowers were purchased and the balloons were purchased, this was their first really big lead in the case, was that the person that made the purchases was a female. May 30th, 4 days after the murder, employees called the police to report what appeared to be an abandoned vehicle in a parking lot of a local Winn-Dixie shopping center. The employees stated that it had been there for a few days with no one in or around it. It was a white Chrysler LeBaron. Investigators sealed off the vehicle, obtained a search warrant, and towed the vehicle to their headquarters to inspect it. There were red/orange curly fibers in the front seat, back seat, and on the driver's door. The fibers were sent for analysis, and it was determined that they were acrylic fibers, likely from a wig. The license plate on the vehicle was traced to a Payless car rental, a local car rental lot. The company had reported this vehicle stolen about 2 weeks prior. Investigators further dug into the vehicle and where it might have come from. Payless car rental was at a business war with Mike Warren's Bargain Motors, which is his car lot. The two lots competed for sales and business, but recently Bargain Motors had placed an ad in the pages that read Payless in big letters with their information underneath. So what Mike basically did was he posted an ad in the paper and put Payless in big capital letters, but then he placed Bargain Motors' phone number and their address and things of that nature underneath the Payless. This ad reportedly caused customers who were looking for Payless to unintentionally call Bargain Motors. Payless supposedly sued Bargain Motors over the ad, but I wasn't able to find much information on the exact lawsuit and everything. A couple told investigators they rented a vehicle from Payless. When it was time to return the vehicle, they accidentally called Bargain Motors. Whoever they spoke to led them to leave the rented vehicle in the Payless lot outside the gate with the keys inside. It was rumored that Mike and one of his employees then stole this vehicle to get back at Payless for the lawsuit. Detectives dug into Mike's business dealings and a possible connection to Marlene's murder. They found out that Mike was being investigated by other authorities for suspicion that he had been rolling back odometers on the vehicles at his lot. They also then learned that Mike was having an affair with Sheila Keene at Bargain Motors. Employees reported having seen Mike and Sheila engage in sexual acts in his office, but Mike and Sheila denied having any sort of relationship. Sheila Keene had been Sheila Sheltra and was married to Richard Keene 3 months after giving birth to their son in 1987. On January 17th of 1990, Sheila filed for a petition for injunction against domestic violence of Richard Keene. The court granted temporary injunction after records show that Keene grabbed and threatened her. According to reports, Sheila moved out of their house in Loxahatchee and into an apartment that Michael allegedly paid the rent for. On October 25th, 1990, police executed a search warrant at Bargain Motors. The raid took place during the nighttime where they seized filing cabinets full of documents. This gave them the ammunition to arrest Mike Warren on October 26th. He was arrested and charged with over 60 charges, including racketeering, odometer tampering, and grand theft. He had been accused of repossessing cars he had sold at his dealership, saying they were stolen and collecting the insurance money. Marlene's murder still remained unsolved in the time that Mike waited for his trial. A lot of people who knew Mike said it seemed that trouble followed him everywhere. He once owned a plane that suddenly disappeared and was found with a broken engine, and he owned racehorses that apparently turned up dead. He had always rubbed people the wrong way, and he seemed to be the stereotypical pushy car salesman. People said he seemed charming and trustworthy, but he was actually a con man. People close to the Warrens said that Marlene and Mike's relationship was in trouble, but they were unable to get a divorce due to financial complications that would come from having to divide their businesses. Mike spent more time at work than at home, which added to the infidelity rumors. Finally, in 1992, Mike went on trial for the charges related to the Bargain Motors incident. During this trial, one of the attorneys accused Mike of being a suspect involved with his wife's murder. This gave Mike's attorney the opportunity to accuse investigators of railroading his client to ultimately charge him with the murder. Despite all of this, a jury found Mike guilty of 43 of the charged counts, and he was sentenced to 9 years in prison. On August 15, 2002, Mike and Sheila were married in Las Vegas. So in 1997, when Mike had been released from prison, he had promptly moved away from Florida to Virginia, along with his girlfriend, Debbie. The couple lived in a huge mansion on a lake, and this lake area had a boat dock. They owned a popular fast food restaurant called the Purple Cow, and they were loved by their employees, and their employees kind of saw Mike and his girlfriend, Debbie, as family. They worked very hard doing multiple jobs at the restaurant, and they did everything they could to keep the business thriving so they could pay their employees well. Mike and Debbie's neighbors said the two were just a happy, fun couple. It was difficult to find anybody that had anything negative to say about them. Difficult, but not impossible. One neighbor said they had an odd run-in with Mike on their property. One day, Mike was in their backyard by the water. He was trying to haul rocks away from his tractor, and the neighbor told Mike that he needed to get off of their property. Mike asked if they could just be neighborly, to which the neighbor responded that the neighborly thing to do would have been for Mike to ask permission to get on the property beforehand. After that, Mike began cursing and yelling at them. And then this neighbor said that Mike really was just a big bully. So Marlene's case had been reopened and it was actively being investigated. Several local Florida investigative reporters were following Mike's actions very closely. One reporter in particular followed Mike all the way to Virginia. She spoke to his neighbors, who all had, of course, lovely things to say about Mike and Debbie. One neighbor invited the reporter in to elaborate on what they knew about Mike. The reporter asked about Sheila Keen, to which the neighbor told them there was no Sheila Keen, that Mike's girlfriend's name was Debbie. It didn't take long for the reporter to realize something. Debbie was actually Sheila. Sheila had been living under a different name and had even dyed her hair blonde. It was found out that once Sheila finally divorced her husband, she and Mike got married in 2002 at the Little White Chapel in Las Vegas, like I had mentioned. So before she had officially divorced Richard, her and Mike were living together in Virginia. She was going by the name Debbie, and then she eventually divorced Richard in 1999. And 3 years later, Sheila, or Debbie, and Mike got married. So I put it in here a little bit more about Sheila quick. Sheila was actually only 27 years old when she met Mike, and he was almost 40 years old at the time that she started working at Bargain Motors. She was described as being fearless, so this made her perfect for repossessing vehicles in dangerous parts of the city for Mike. So I guess she was a good asset to have for the company because their repossessions occurred in certain dangerous areas, and apparently she had no fear. She just went into things and did it, I guess, without question. So they said that that made her useful for the business. Residents of her apartment after she moved out of her and Richard's home stated that they actually thought Mike was her husband because of how frequently he was at that apartment. Unfortunately, Marlene's case went cold because investigators had nothing to charge Mike and Sheila with. In 2013, the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office received a grant for $125,000 to help them take another look at some cold cases. And this finally gave them the opportunity to take another look at Marlene's case. And they felt that having this case be looked at again with fresh eyes and with the advancements that DNA and technology had experienced would help them finally solve her murder. Since, of course, DNA and other testing had far advanced since 1990 when the murder actually occurred. Detectives were able to go back and look at the evidence that they gathered in the white Chrysler LeBaron, including the acrylic wig fibers that were found. Long strands of brown human hair were also found along with the wig fibers, which were able to be tested as well. Here's a side note, just for a random side note. Richard Keen, Sheila's ex-husband, did ultimately pass away in 2016. I'm not exactly sure if police or anyone ever questioned Richard on his thoughts about if Mike and Sheila were actually having an affair. I couldn't really find much about that. I'm sure he obviously knew he was abusing her and things of that nature, but I tried to find things about maybe Richard's feelings on the whole, you know, the whole thing. On September 26, 2017, Palm Beach County detectives, armed with the new results of their DNA testing, called the Washington County Sheriff's Department in Virginia, and they finally issued a warrant for the arrest of Sheila Keen, which I think she went by Sheila Keen Warren now. So as Mike and Sheila were returning from a road trip to Vermont, they were pulled over by police in their black Cadillac Escalade on September 26, 2017. Police told Sheila they had a warrant for her arrest for the murder of Marlene Warren. She was taken into custody while Mike was left with his vehicle. Because unfortunately at this time, there was no evidence to directly prove his involvement in the murder. Sheila had been very quick to waive her rights to an extradition hearing. Police said she seemed kind of eager to just be brought back to Palm Beach County to have her day in court. The day following Sheila's arrest, Palm Beach County State Attorney announced that if Sheila was convicted, they would be seeking the death penalty or life in prison. Sheila denied any involvement in the murder, and she said she was out repoing cars at the time that Marlene was murdered. Despite facing murder charges, Sheila had this big smile on her face in her mugshot. You can look it up. It is kind of creepy. And then there's a mugshot from her past when she was 21. She had been arrested for shoplifting. And it was noted by a source that the mugshots were eerily similar. She was smiling when she got caught. In 2018, the sheriff's office released the DNA evidence that they said had solidified their arrest warrant. The brown hairs found in the Chrysler LeBaron, along with the curly wig fibers, were a DNA match to Sheila. Additionally, one of the clerks at the Publix positively identified Sheila as being the one who bought the balloons and the basket of carnations on the day of the murder. Both of the women who'd been at the costume shop also positively identified Sheila in a photo lineup as the woman who had purchased the clown costume before Marlene's murder. Marlene's son Joey told a reporter he'd actually met Sheila before his mother was killed. 6 months before the shooting, there was a party at the Warren's house. Mike's mother had seen Sheila and made the comment to Marlene that she was going to have to watch that one because she was so pretty. Referring to Sheila, of course, Sheila was apparently very attractive. I don't see it. I mean, but to each their own. Everyone has their own opinion. And it was kind of, they say, an eerie prediction as to the events that later would obviously happen. And it's kind of weird because Mike's mom made a comment to Marlene saying that Marlene would need to watch that woman. And then in reality, Mike had already been having this affair with Sheila. So that is, it's very odd. I guess maybe she knew the type of women her son was into. Not sure about that, but I'm guessing. Sheila's defense attorney was prepared to argue his client's innocence based on several things. He brought up the fact that almost all witness descriptions of the murder emphasized how tall the murderer was, and that even Joey said the clown had to have been over 6 feet tall. Sheila was between 5'6", 5'7", some reports say 5'8". The attorney brought up the ambiguity of the sex of the shooter and the fact that everyone who'd been on scene believed the shooter to be a male. Additionally, one of the strands of hair in the LeBaron was found to have a mix of male and female DNA. Okay, so, I mean, that could easily be explained, I guess, because in the LeBaron, supposedly Mike and another one of his employees stole the LeBaron, so it could definitely have male DNA in there as well. And I feel like Sheila totally dressed up as a clown to make her gender anonymous, because clowns can totally be any gender. And with a clown wig and a nose and wearing those tactical boots, she might have been going for the look of being a man. And she might have been doing the same thing when she picked up the clown costume, because the ladies at the shop knew the person was a woman, but they say she could have been androgynous, where Sheila could have, you know, played the part of a male or a female very well. So she looked like both. And that's obviously what I feel like she was going for. Despite her continued denial of being involved in Marlene's murder, in April of 2023, 59-year-old Sheila Keene pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. Her plea deal was made in exchange for a 12-year sentence with credit for time served, having already served 5.5 years along with gain time. Sheila really wasn't going to spend much time in jail. Florida's gain time incentivizes good behavior, cutting time off of an inmate's sentence for each month they're in jail without incident. A law was enacted that required inmates to still serve 85% of their time, regardless of their gain. Because Sheila's crime was committed before the law was made, she wasn't subject to the gain limit. It's likely that she'll serve no more than 2 years in prison. They also say that it has to do with the statute of limitations, because the murder happened in 1990. And I'm not sure how that works in Florida, but I know a lot of states, there are no statutes of limitations on a crime such as murder. And I don't think there should be any type of gains incentivizing good behavior for crimes that are violent like that. And yeah, she missed that law because it wasn't in effect when she was arrested or when she did the crime, but still, I'm guessing this law does apply to, you know, any crimes in Florida if they were committed after that law was enacted. After his wife's arrest and imprisonment, Michael sold the restaurant that they owned, but he apparently remains in Virginia. He's never been formally charged in Marlene's murder, nor has there been any concrete evidence to connect him with the murder. That just really bothers me because he was having an affair with her and clearly he was involved. Because I find it very difficult for Sheila to just enact this murder and not tell the man that she's cheating with, hey, I killed your wife. Like, why would you want to be with somebody that murdered your wife so they could have you? Like, without, you know what I mean? Without being involved in the murder, without any knowledge of it. So, like, if I was obviously having an affair and I didn't come up with a murder plot to kill my husband and the person I'm with says, hey, I killed your husband, by the way, so we could be, like, I would not want to be with that person, no matter how bad me and my husband are doing or whatever. I'm not going to be with that person that just murdered my husband unless I agreed to it or obviously had some involvement. So I just feel like he definitely knew there was, you know, plans. But since it was all the way back in 1990, there's not really a trail to go by in terms of text messages and social media and things of that nature where they could see those two communicating and saying, like, it's done, you know, like some of the other cases we have like this where we see people communicating with their mistresses or the person that they're cheating with and saying, hey, okay, you know, I killed them, it's done, blah, 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 let's go ride off into the sunset. Like, they don't have any of that. So that does make it more difficult to charge Mike with anything. But to me, it's very obvious, but that's how the law works. You can't charge somebody just because it's obvious. I will end this with a quote by Palm Beach County State Attorney David Ehrenberg. Quote, Sheila Keen Warren has finally been forced to admit that she was the one who dressed as a clown and took the life of an innocent victim. She will be a convicted murderer for the rest of her days. End quote. So regardless of time served in prison, regardless of if she gets a long time sentence, she's a murderer. Everyone knows she's a murderer. And, you know, Marlene can finally rest. She got her justice. She can rest in peace. And her family finally knows who did it. So regardless of the time spent in prison, she has the label of murderer on her now. And that obviously changes the world's opinion of you. All right, everyone. That concludes this episode of It's Crime Time. Thank you for listening. And until next time.